From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Super fired up about today's show. We have Emily Hoffman in the house, and we are going to be talking trash. And, you know, I always think of the saying, one man's garbage is another man's treasure. So today we're going to be talking about that, because in today's waste management companies, they're really using innovation to drive, a better environment for us. So Emily is the public information assistant at Western Placer Waste Management Authority. That's a mouthful, Emily. How do you shorten it up?
Yeah, I just say that I'm the chief trash talker.
That's my job,
is talking about trash.
Okay, so we have the chief trash talker, and maybe just give me a little bit of overview of the organization, maybe your background, how you got into it, and then we'll dive into the details of the nitty gritty.
Yeah, so the Western Placer Waste Management Authority is a joint powers authority that was established in 1978 between Placer County and the cities of Roseville, Rockland, and Lincoln, with the sole purpose of owning and operating a regional landfill and all necessary improvements. In layman's speak, because that's very jargony, we're essentially a government agency that is responsible for managing all of the solid waste. So the recycling, disposal, green waste, composting, hazardous waste, other materials like that for our community. We service basically the entirety of Placer County, with the exception of the Tahoe and the Truckee areas over in the eastern portion of our county. And so it's interesting, because the name Western Placer implies that it's maybe not as far east as our reach goes, but we have over 400,000 residential and commercial customers that we service. And so basically, if you live, visit, or work anywhere in Western Placer County, your garbage comes to my facility.
That's a lot of garbage. And we have grown, so the garbage is increasing.
Yes, yes. So we get daily 2 million pounds of garbage every single day that we have to sort through, that we recycle, that we sort of, you know, manage before, you know, disposal or recycling happens. And we've actually been planning for that future that you're talking about. Placer County is anticipated to double in population size over the next 30 years. And from our perspective, that means we're doubling in the amount of trash we have. And so we need to make sure we're preparing and setting ourselves up for a good future with that.
Yeah. And then you grew up wanting to be in trash, right?
No, not at all. You didn't? Not at all. No.
Everybody wants to grow up and be around garbage.
Yeah, no. It
smells good.
Oh, yeah. Smells good. Tastes even better. But it's actually interesting. Of my team, only one of us actually went to college and was like, I want to work in garbage for the rest of my life.
Uh-huh.
Everybody else sort of came to it in other ways. I've always cared about sustainability and also my community. It's, you know, very proud to live in Placer County and have worked here for many years. But I, you know, sort of fell into the garbage route when, you know, the job became available. I didn't realize how cool it was going to be. And now I absolutely love it, and I couldn't imagine doing anything but trash.
Well, I think it's super important, too. You think about wanting to do something with a career that is good for society. The more innovative we are in the way that we dispose of our garbage, the healthier we're all going to be and the better planet we're going to have. So it's highly important and super important for our hometown, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's also one of the interesting things about Placer County and the way our system operates is we call it the one big bin method. So you toss, we sort. So here in Placer County, we don't have separate garbage and recycling containers. It all goes in one bin, and then it gets sorted at our facility. So we go through garbage from everywhere. So, you know, people's houses, businesses, you know, places that don't typically offer recycling solutions as well. So like think parks, gas stations, car washes, shopping around stores, things like that. We go through all of that garbage to recover the resources. And it's pretty amazing. It's very different from what we call traditional recycling communities, where they have to separate them out themselves into a bunch of different containers and cans and bins and things like that. So
yeah. Well, I remember as a kid, because I grew up in the Placer County, and we went over to the dump is what we called it. And it was disgusting. And, you know, but it was something you did, and you just dump it into the big hole, which I guess is, you know, on the dirt. and we ultimately ended up burying it. It's now over kind of by where Galleria Mall is and some of that kind of stuff, Green Acres and some of that stuff. So I assume they kind of dug all that up and got rid of it, or is it still underneath there?
So that landfill is actually still there. So that's actually, that landfill that's right there, I actually live right by where that landfill is, which is interesting. But part of the reason why my agency was established was to own and operate one central landfill. So back in 1978, which was, we actually first opened about 45 years ago. It was 45 years ago, a couple weeks ago. So the idea was there were all these tiny little landfills out about the community. So like that one on Berry Street that's over by the Galleria.
Right, Berry Street Mall is what we used to call it.
Yeah, and so the one that's over there.
Because
so
you could actually shop there when I was a
really?
Kid.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
You could go buy the stuff. They sort it out and then there's like, oh, this stuff's got some value, you know, some old coffee pot or something. People
that's
come
cool.
by and buy
that's
it.
Cool. So all these little tiny landfills, the idea was if we have one central location, and in 1978, they said, why don't we build it way out in the middle of nowhere where no one is, no one's ever going to want to grow or build homes there. And of course, I'm being a little facetious when I say that, but we're located out at the corner of Fidiment and Athens. So out in unincorporated Placer County, we're actually smack dab in the middle of the Sunset Area Plan. And they said, we'll build a large regional landfill. We're the only active landfill in Placer County. So that means this is the only place where Placer County has to dispose of wastes in landfills and things like that. And granted, most things don't go automatically to the landfill. That's actually, you talking about that memory reminded me about when I was a kid, because, you know, I grew up in, you know, the Sacramento area. I remember going with my dad to Kiefer Landfill, and you would drive your car up and you would dump all your stuff out and you'd leave and it smelled awful. Well, that's the interesting thing about our landfill now is no customers really are going out to the landfill. You're not really driving your car up and dumping things in a hole. We have a special public drop-off area where customers will go dump off their materials based upon what type it is and things like that. And then we actually will sort through those materials before things go to the landfill. So we take a second look at everything. So nothing really goes straight to the landfill with the exception of some things like treated medical waste and stuff
like
that.
Okay, yeah, I haven't been out there in a couple of years, but I remember, so you still back your pickup truck up or whatever your vehicle is, and you push it off the side and it falls, and it's kind of fun to watch your stuff break.
Yeah.
But that's like it's actually going into a container that's down below. Is that right?
Yes.
And then from there you do the sorting.
We sort through it to make sure that we're able to recover resources, things like that. It's really interesting. My boss refers to this a lot. We don't consider ourselves just, you know, waste and recycling. We call ourselves a mining operation. Hmm. We're constantly mining the waste stream for any valuable materials. So anything that somebody might want to use to recycle, that's also a huge thing about recycling. Something is only recyclable if somebody wants to buy it. So that means that just because, you know, you put a plastic container in, you know, your bin or whatever, unless somebody wants to buy that material, it's not going to get pulled out of the waste stream and recycled. And that's a huge misconception about recycling across the board. And in traditional recycling communities, we call that wish cycling. So where you're tossing something in your recycling bin and you wish that it would get recycled, but it doesn't actually get recycled. Hmm. You're just sort of creating more garbage. The difference being here in Placer County, we only pull out the materials that are valuable, that are actually recyclable, that we actually have somebody who wants it. So that means we pull out random materials that you might not assume are recyclable, but if somebody wants to buy it, we pull it out. So when I give tours, I love to walk people by and show them off. Look at all the doorknobs we pulled out of garbage bins today.
Gosh.
Or look at the CDs and DVDs that we're able to remove from the waste stream and recycle, sink faucets and shower heads and random things like that. I saw somebody pull out of our recycling facility a full bicycle, which is metal and rubber. And so those are all good recyclable materials. And so we're able to pull that out as part of that mining operation. We can remove it from the waste stream and it actually gets recycled, which is pretty incredible.
Okay, I want to walk myself through it a little bit if you don't mind. Okay, so we've got a dumpster. We're in Rockland and we have a dumpster out there in so somebody comes and picks it up and dumps it into a garbage truck and then takes it over to you, I assume.
Yes.
And then that thing dumps it into one of these bins for sorting.
Yeah, it goes. Right? So if it comes on a garbage truck, it goes to what we call the tipping floor.
Okay.
So it's essentially a really large floor that's at the base of what we call the materials recovery facility. So that's, or I call it the MRF, because MRF.
The MRF. Yeah, yeah.
So the MRF. So we dump it on the tipping floor. So the trucks will tip it out. So that's where the name comes from. So the material gets tipped out, and then loaders, so pick it up with their claws and move it on to, we've got conveyor belts that take it upstairs, and that's where it starts the sorting process.
But that's kind of a mixture of, it could be compost, it could be, I don't know, a refrigerator door or something like that.
Yeah.
It could be something super gross, right? It could be all over the board. So I guess they're like excavators or something, like heavy lifters, they pull it up and put it on the conveyor belt, and then it starts traveling, I assume.
Yep, and it goes through the process. Now, the current MRF was built in 1995, so it's about as old as me. And in, you know, human years, you know, I'm still pretty spry, you know, considering Botox, but that's about it. In recycling infrastructure years, it's ancient. And so,
oh, it is, okay.
Yeah, so we're actually...
I remember my wife worked for the city of Roseville. She was the HR director for several years, and I don't know, she talked about the MRF and how, know, innovative it was.
Well, that's the thing. At the time, it's been incredibly innovative for our community. We're currently in the process of building a $120 million new facility. And it's going to include, because right now it's very, mechanical. So we've got mechanical separation based on size, magnets, some things like that. Our new building that we're currently in the process of constructing right now, it uses AI-powered optical sorters, some robotic features, a lot of automation and things like that to really not remove the human element from it, but really rely heavily on sort of the new innovations that have happened in the recycling industry. And so to really take advantage of that and then shift the role of human sorters to more of a quality control position.
Okay, so describe to me the size of the conveyor belt. Is it 20 foot wide, or is it bigger than that?
No, it's probably about like 6 to 8 feet wide.
6 to 8 feet wide. Yeah. The stuff gets plopped on there and it's traveling along. And then there are, I guess, along the assembly line, or if you will, or sorting line, there's, you said magnets is part of it. So you've got, it goes through a magnetic thing and it picks up anything that might be metal that might have value in terms of metal.
Yeah. Well, I'll sort of go take you through the whole process.
Okay, yeah.
So there's four ways that you can sort material for recycling. The first is just the angle. So we do a lot of things on an angle, whether it goes up, whether it goes down, the angle of things helps it move forward.
Okay.
The second of which being size. So we can separate materials by size. In our new facility, the size will be 12 inches. So we want everything to be 12 inches or smaller. If it's not 12 inches or smaller, it actually goes to a shredder that, you know, not your average office paper shredder, but it's an industrial shredder that size reduces it to that 12 inch size that we're looking for. Yeah.
That gets rid of some good stuff and turns it into basically raw materials.
Yeah. So then it goes back. So then it all goes, and then we separate by density. So we separate by if it's light, medium, or heavy. And that can be things like, you know, lumber, metals, plastic, container, all sorts of stuff. So you separate it by what's, you know, what's dense and what's not. Then lastly, it's by material type. So you say, okay, is it a plastic bottle? Is it, you know, an aluminum can? Is it a piece of wood, or is it, you know, food waste, whatever it is? That's what we sort at the last stage. Right now in our existing facility, we use human sorters to do that, you know, that part of the
and
process.
And you use they visually
looking at the items, and human sorters are great. They can sort about 40 items per minute, which is incredible considering I can probably sort about 5 items per minute.
Okay.
They're really highly skilled. But some of our, you know, but that'll be replaced in our new facility.
Those dream jobs are going to get replaced.
Yeah. I think that they're going to enjoy their new jobs more.
I know they're high-paying jobs. Yeah, right? You're working for, like a government type entity. It's not a bad job.
True. But, you know, a little smelly. Yeah. But those will be, those positions will be more shifted. And that actual picking out of the material type will be those optical sorters, the robotic elements, and the automation part. So it'll be instead an optical sorter, which will scan with infrared, and it'll, when it sees items, it'll actually use puffs of air to blow it off of the line into separate.
Even the heavy stuff, belts. It'll blow. It's a big even puff of air.
Even the heavy stuff. Even the heavy stuff. I mean, it's a big puff, but like it, even the heavy stuff will get pulled off. And then at that point, then it'll be the human sorters that are doing more of the quality control that say, oh, you know, there's a rogue aluminum can in with the cardboard or, you know, vice versa. Right. And so they're the ones who are going to be, it'll be a bit of a different, a bit slower pace job.
Okay, so you've got it sorted then, and they're into these four categories, I guess. You mentioned cardboard and aluminum cans, probably not going to be in the same. Maybe they are. I don't know. They're sorted, and then you got food waste, and you got all these things. What happens to it after it's sorted?
Yeah, so it varies. So, and that's part of the fun game of recycling is, like I mentioned earlier, something's only recyclable if somebody wants to buy it or purchase it. There's few recycling things that happen locally. So here in Placer County, carpet recycling. So carpet is recycled in Lincoln. And then some metal waste and mixed electronic waste is actually recycled in Roseville and then West Sacramento. So there's a bit of it happens locally. The rest of it could happen across the state, across the nation, across an ocean. It's really just where the interested buyer is who wants to turn it into something new. So we will bale it, which is essentially where we make it look like a giant hay bale. Or if it's a material like glass or, you know, large metal, then it just stays in a container. That being said, we have a 1,000-acre campus and we're currently not utilizing large portions of it. So several years ago, we decided to do a master planning effort and we decided to set aside as part of that effort 300 acres of our campus for what we call compatible manufacturing technologies. So the idea being, what if we didn't have to ship our recyclables across an ocean? What if we just had to ship them across the street? And so creating what we call a local circular economy of having that manufacturing, the recycling happening directly on our campus reduces the transportation costs and other things like that. Also creating a stable market for our products. So saying, you know, this entity that has, you know, sited itself on our land has decided they're going to take all of our aluminum or all of our, you know, plastic bags or all of our food waste or, you know, whatever it is, they, you know, pick whatever they're interested in and that they want to use to turn into a new product or recycle. We will have that stable market. And so we don't have to worry about, are we going to give this to the highest bidder or does anybody really want this material? We have sort of a stable market for those products.
Okay, so that already exists. You're already remarketing those products out to people. I own a concrete company, and one of the things that we, I think, utilize is, you know, kind of like base rock. Before you pour the concrete, you go buy some recycled concrete, and So you're able to, it's, you know, more sustainable or whatever, environmentally friendly type of approach because you're recycling something versus going and getting some new rock and putting it in there. You guys do that there too? You guys do recycled concrete there?
We have recycled concrete at our facility. So yeah, so that gets sold out to interested buyers and things like that.
What about food? I had a guy on my show a couple 5 years ago, I guess it was, and he took food from grocery stores and remarketed it or, you know, utilized it to, I don't know what he did. I can't remember what he did with it, but I think he created other like stuff you could eat. But
interesting.
Yeah, maybe like pet food or something. I should remember that so bad.
Yeah. Well, so we got a couple interesting things going on with food waste. So there's actually a state law that was passed in 2016 called SB 1383, which the official title of it is Reducing Short-Lived Climate Pollutants, which essentially means reducing the amount of organic waste we landfill. So currently, if you have things like organic waste is stuff like food scraps, soiled paper products. Mm-hmm. So think about last night's, you know, leftovers or, you know, chicken bones, things like that. Certain communities across the state, actually most of them, to comply with this law are requiring their residents to remove that organic waste from their regular garbage bin and put it in a green waste container or something like that. And they have like a countertop compost bin that they have to dump out weekly into, you know, their green waste can and things like that. There's some issues with that. It's messy. You know, it can smell pretty
people
bad.
People aren't compliant.
No, people don't.
People
I was
like,
going to say,
I'm too lazy.
I was going to say, you know, my parents live in El Dorado County and I had to be like, you know you have to do this. Like, you know, El Dorado County isn't as cool as Placer.
We're littering if we do it wrong, Mom.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to, you know, yell at her about that. But what's nice is here in Placer County, as part of that $120 million new facility, that facility will actually help us comply with that state law and will remove up to, or at least 75% of the organic waste from that waste stream. And then we'll remove it. And currently the plan is to compost it. So we've been composting at our facility since the mid-90s. Our compost is OMRI certified, which means it is certified safe for use in certified organic farming.
Okay.
So it's really high quality stuff. But that being said, we produce currently anywhere between 65 and 75,000 tons of compost every year, just from green waste at people's houses, but also from some of this food waste that we collect. And that's expected to also double over the next few years. And so we are really looking at what are some innovative things we can do with food waste? Because, you know, by the time it reaches our facility, we probably don't want to give it to somebody to eat. It's it's kind of been, you know, ruined or spoiled along the process. And so we actually partnered with the Carlson Center at Sac State.
My friend Dale Carlson.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say Cameron Law. Was really the one who we partnered with. And we partnered with them to do a pitch competition. So it was the Circular Economy Innovation Competition.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. So the idea.
So you're actually bringing entrepreneurs into the picture.
That we are.
I love that.
That we are. So we said, we put it out there. We said, hey, here's all the materials we have at our facility. And we sort of ranked it based upon if we had a stable market for it or not. So we said, here's some things that we really need some help with. And if you have ideas of how we can repurpose it, we'll give you $20,000 and we'll help you start a pilot project on our site so you can test out your innovation. So we did this competition last year. We had our final pitch actually at the Roseville Venture Lab.
Oh, our
which
office.
Was great. Yes. Yeah. It was a great time. So we had the final pitch at the Roseville Venture Lab, and our winners were two sophomores from UC Davis, Rosh and Amir, who grew bugs in their dorm room that ate trash.
Oh, wow.
So, that's sort of the simple explanation, but those two students, they had patented these incubation hutches for essentially a black housefly that when it was in the larva stage would eat food waste and would leave behind a casing that we can use in composting. Then, so it would eat this food waste, then they would harvest it. So they would, you know, flash freeze it at a certain point and then sell it as reptile food in local pet stores. So they would
Rosh and Amir, huh? They came through.
They would use the full life cycle of the bug, but also help us reduce waste. And so they won our competition. We gave them $20,000 and they're going to start a pilot project on our site pretty soon.
Okay, let me ask a follow-up question on that one. Okay,
yeah.
So the pilot program hasn't started yet.
No, because they're now juniors.
I mean, how
at
many
UC Davis,
bugs
so.
Does it take to devour a meal?
So that was actually one of the primary questions our judges had for them. They said, what's your scale? Like, how big could you do this? And they said, well, we've been testing this in our dorm room. So, we're at a small scale right now. But essentially, you know, they did another pilot this summer back at Davis. So we're trying to see if, you know, if we made progress on the scalability size. But because we said, well, we get 2 million pounds of garbage every single day. And so, you know, we've got a lot of material for you to play with.
You think about that. So we talked earlier, my office used to be, I'm a security camera salesman by trade. Before we sold our companies, we had offices over right, not that far from where you're at. And so when the wind would blow, it's over kind of by, if you're thinking about this as a listener, it's kind of by Thunder Valley out in that area, you know, down 65, Highway 65 in Rockland, where Rockland and Lincoln sort of meet up in Roseville as well. So anyway, in that realm, there's the smell that can happen and kind of filter over to our offices or even the casino today. But I'm trying to picture bugs or flies, I'm picturing flies, and I think I would rather have the smell than the flies coming over to my place.
Well, and that's why they've got the incubation hutches, which fully contain all the bugs and everything like that.
Oh,
so
wow.
They all stay inside. And also, I think very few of the flies actually reach maturation. because they harvest them at the larva stage. And okay.
So you're not worried about escaping flies or other bugs.
That's not really too much of the concern.
Are they flies or are they some other kind of bug?
They're house flies. So
house flies. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That would take a lot of flies.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why they built and they patented these incubation hutches to really, to grow them, to feed them, and then to harvest them out of, which is incredible.
Wow. That is incredible. But it's right out of UC Davis.
I know. Well, and that's I think part of what we're actually going to restart the pitch competition in a few weeks at the Global Entrepreneurship Week is when we're launching this, so later in November. And we're really excited for this next version of this because basically, you know, we've got the trash, so we've got the resources for folks to, you know, mine out of our waste stream. If somebody says they want something, we're happy to give it to them. So we've got the resources. We have the land. We've got a 1,000-acre campus with land set aside for pilot projects and compatible manufacturing technologies. We just need the idea. You know, just need an innovator, an entrepreneur who has a creative idea of how we can reuse these materials that we already have at our fingertips.
And as a pilot, when you run a pilot program like that, do you do you get the technology for free? How does that work? What's that relationship look like when we're going to do a pilot program, but we need to be able to utilize this because if it works, because a lot of startups or, you know, guys in their dorm room, they can't scale it out for you.
Yeah.
But in order to make it work for you and maybe get it to work for the rest of the world, somebody needs to build a business out of it.
Yes. And so that's why we consider it to be a public-private partnership. So we, as the public part of the partnership, you know, we provide certain resources to help you get off the ground, whether that's financial. So if they are the winner of our pitch competition, they get a financial incentive for winning that, but also access to our materials and things like that the land that we have. Ultimately, the invention is that's the private side of it. That's the entrepreneur, the business side of it. And so we can come to an agreement about what that sort of that looks like and things like that. But it's a public-private partnership. So really to benefit our community here, as well as then if it works, everybody.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's very innovative to come from a government type agency. I know it's a joint power sort of business, but I mean, really, this is a government agency. It's actually multiple governments collectively getting together to do this stuff. So really cool that we have the leadership to be thinking that way.
Yeah. We're governed by a 5-member board of directors that's comprised of local elected leaders from our communities. So currently our board is comprised of, our chair is Roseville City Council Member Scott Alvord.
He's been on the show.
Yeah. So we've got Scott, who's really passionate about this stuff too. So I do credit him for pushing it forward, as well as the rest of our board. So we've got Scott Alvord from the city of Roseville, Bill Halden from the city of Rockland, Dan Carlskint from the city of Lincoln.
Okay.
And then supervisors Shanti Landon and Bonnie Gore, who sort of round out our board of directors. And they really are innovative in terms of, you know, trying to create something that, you know, enhances the quality of life, but also the economic vitality of our region. I mean, I think I talk about this a lot where, you know, I do joke that I talk trash and, you know, I'm a waste wizard and, you know, all this stuff. But when we think about what we do at the authority and we call it the WAPMA. So when we think about what we do at the WAPMA, it's really not waste. We consider it resources because I'll use my, you know, sparkling soda or, you know, water as an example. When I'm finished drinking, you know, that aluminum can, it's waste to me. I have no need for an empty aluminum can. I'm just going to throw it away. Well, by the time it reaches my facility, that's a precious resource that we can mine and then pull out of the waste stream, and it gets, you know, baled and recycled and will probably be turned into another aluminum can. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we don't think of it as resource. We don't think of it as waste. It's resources. By the time it reaches us, it's, you know, that piece of cardboard, that's a valuable resource to us. That wood, that, you know, aluminum, that plastic, you know, the food waste even. These are all incredible resources that we have. And I do think that our board really has an incredible foresight into sort of that future planning of preparing us for a better, sustainable Placer County.
So who buys that aluminum can?
It varies, but mostly aluminum can recyclers who want to turn it into more aluminum cans.
Right.
Aluminum cans are actually a really good example of something that's infinitely recyclable. So it can be recycled over and over and over and over and over again. And so this aluminum can was probably 80 other aluminum cans in its lifetime.
So people collect them up and sell them to packaging companies, people who are doing packaging of soda or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the toughest thing to get rid of?
Certain types of plastic. Currently in the plastics market, types one, which think like plastic water bottles. Mm-hmm. So that's PET. So that has a fairly stable market. Number two, which is HDPE, which is like laundry soap containers, motor oil containers, things like that. The milk jugs, those are all fairly recyclable. And then there's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, which mostly are not really recyclable. One of the biggest ones actually being number 4, which is sort of a film plastic. So think like your garbage bags, think like all the plastic packaging that's over absolutely everything these days. And I use the garbage bags actually as a great example of kind of a necessary evil. So your garbage bag is good. The person who picks up your garbage wants you to bag your garbage. It means that, because if you just have free-flowing garbage, we're going to have litter all over our roads.
Mm, true.
You know, it's just going to be flying everywhere, probably have birds getting into it, stuff like that. So you want to bag your garbage. It also helps preserve the trucks, your garbage container itself, you know, keeps it from getting messy and dirty and things like that. By the time it reaches our facility, we just rip open those bags, and then there's really no known recycling market for it. And so they ultimately just make their way out to the landfill, which, you know, is currently probably, you know, the most environmentally conscious thing we can do with some of those materials versus, you know, just holding on to it.
So you bury that in the landfill on your 1,000 acres.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you work with Origin Materials at all?
I've heard of them.
Okay,
but no,
they're
we don't
a
work
local
with them, but yeah.
company. They actually pitched at GF, not pitched. They presented at GFX. A local success story came out of UC Davis. John Bissell ended up taking his company public. They're in West Sac, and they take trees and other lumber type lumber type products, and turn it into something that replaces petroleum. And I might be butchering the company a little bit, their description, but they basically replace the petroleum that goes into plastic bottles.
Mm.
And they're based right out of West Sac. And I mean, they're right here in our backyard. I don't know if a company that much, is that a company like that too mature to be part of a pitch competition and a pilot?
Not necessarily.
Because they're doing some really innovative stuff over there that, you know, obviously.
Well, and that's where it's important to point out too, part of our plan for, we call it the Renewable Placer Waste Action Plan. That's our plan for basically the next 50 years that involves a lot of that compatible manufacturing technologies on our property. We're going to need pilot projects, but we're also going to need, you know, fully scaled operations that, mm-hmm. you know, are operating and, you know, hearing about one in our community. That's great. Yeah. I'd love to hear more about them. But it's something where, you know, we're going to need both because, you know, and I think you probably understand from an entrepreneur perspective, it's, you know, it there's going to be some ideas that flop, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, they're good
Tell
ideas.
Me about it.
Yeah, there's going to be some great ideas, but that they just ultimately don't work, yeah. whether it's, you know, financing, scaling, you know, whatever it looks like. And so we're going to need some of those ideas that are already, you know, fully off the ground and running. So I think that's sort of what we're looking for at the authority is a healthy mix of both of operations that are already in place to do some innovative things there, but also investing in entrepreneurs and innovation mm-hmm. and, you know, creating these new ideas for what we can do, because I think it's going to take us doing some unique things in order to solve this challenge. Cause yeah, like I mentioned, we're going to have a doubling in the amount of waste that we're getting, mm-hmm. you know, pretty soon in the near future. And I think that it's going to require some innovative things to solve some of these really large recycling and waste related challenges.
Yeah. The food guy's still here in Sacramento too. I think he's somewhere, I might be West Sac. I've been out to his facility, but it's been a few years. So there's a few.
I'd love to bring him back to Placer County.
Yeah, let's get him to Placer. let's figure that out. Both of those two might be interesting relationships, and I know they would already know about you, but making sure they're on your radar so that you can recruit them to think about solving some of these big problems. So you really play an interesting role in the entrepreneurial ecosystem, which is really my world, is, you know, making investments into startup type companies and helping entrepreneurs to get over the hump and make sales. And but the first thing you got to do is decide, you know, figure out whether you got a real product or not, whether it works, and, you know, does anybody want to buy it, and some of those kind of things. You actually help that in a major way. And I have to think that, you know, that's part of, I mentioned, you know, your leadership, but that's leadership within the Sacramento community too. What are you seeing out there in terms of our region, in terms of those pockets of leadership stepping up to help solve some of these, you know, world challenges?
Yeah. I mean, and obviously my background is, you know, here in Placer County, and that's sort of my wheelhouse. And I will say, I do think that one of the amazing benefits, my agency in particular, that benefits from this is, you know, collaboration is king, particularly in this industry. I think that, you know, if one company or one government agency tries to tackle waste or tries to tackle this, it might work semi-locally, but it really won't work for the entire, you know, nation, world, whatever. And I think that because we're able to collaborate here in Placer County, because we have multiple agencies, multiple companies, businesses, you know, things like that coming together to really invest in this, you know, and sort of create a solution, I think that that's going to be really incredible for the future, not only just for Placer County, and ideally, you know, putting us on the map is, you know, we're really thinking innovatively about garbage, which most people probably are like, you know, they don't think about it. You toss it in the bin and then you forget about it. You're like, yeah, this is somebody else's problem. Well, it's my problem. And, it's all of our problems ultimately. And so I think that that's where the leadership here in Placer County, I mean, my board especially, but, you know.
The people you named, if you're not from around here, you might not know these names, but these are some of the most respected people in our community.
Yeah. And I think that they're really sort of leading the charge for making some of this stuff happen. And so I think it's incredible that we do have strong leaders like that here in our community. And I think that ultimately that's going to be great for Placer County, but then ultimately great for the Sacramento region and hopefully, you know, the state and the rest of the nation as well.
Without a doubt. What challenges are you running into? Because this, you know, these are massive undertakings that take years and years to address. There's got to be like major challenges that, you know, that you guys face when you're trying to, you know, make this type of stuff happen.
Yeah. Time is probably the biggest challenge we have.
Oh.
So I mentioned too that we started this master planning process back in 2015. You know, we just got that master plan approved in December of 2022. You know, it takes a really long time to thoughtfully plan out this kind of stuff, but also to plan for the next 50-100 years. Is that sort of the planning, the level of planning that we're doing? And so it does take a lot of time. So we're currently in the middle, I think I mentioned, of the $120 million, you know, facility renovation and construction project. We broke ground in April, and we won't actually finish construction until February of 2025. So we've got a while to go in terms of, you know, active construction and building and testing and, you know, things like that. And it's really exciting to see it all happen right now. But unfortunately, it's time is probably our biggest enemy and our biggest challenge is just making sure that, you know, we're planning ahead. You know, because we are a government agency, you know, we got several layers.
You're
of,
not bureaucratic,
you know,
are you? Are you?
No, we're not that bureaucratic. But it's but you know, all those important leaders I mentioned have to approve everything we do. So you know, got to make sure that we dot our I's and cross our T's before you know.
Well, we're talking about public safety too with all this public health.
Oh, exactly. So we want to make sure that we're fully preparing, but also you know. A $120 million building doesn't get built in one night. And, you know, as much as we'd like to, you know, concrete takes longer to cure. So,
yes. So thinking about the public, right, there's 2.5 million people round ballpark in a number here in the Sacramento region. What's our role in engaging in this? I'll call it an opportunity, but really it's a challenge that we face and, you know, keeping the environment, preserving what we have as much as possible. How does the population help besides picking up litter and using these trash bags when we put them in the, you know, in our trash cans?
Yeah. So I'd say, you know, being conscious about the products you buy. Like I mentioned, aluminum, one of those products that's infinitely recyclable. Glass is another one of those too. Something I always mention too is, you know, if you need to use, you know, single use things. So think like, you know, single use plastic, paper plates, or, you know, things like that. It's like, you know, check the labels, see if it's entirely paper or entirely plastic, or, you know, what, even what type, if it's a one, a two, or if it's like a three, a four, a five, a six, a seven, you know, maybe
avoid
those.
Well, so like I go to the grocery store and they're asking me paper or plastic, and the plastic is more... The paper tears. I mean, come on.
That's true. And that's
but the plastic's
so
bad for the environment. Is that right?
Yeah. So, so that's
get to bring my own reusable that I can use for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Bring your own reusable bag.
Bring that gym bag. And,
yeah. That's probably the, you know, the better swap is, is use a reusable bag if you can.
Yeah,
things like
that's what
that.
My wife does.
I know. Well,
I'm lazy.
Well, and it's funny because I've got a, I have in my trunk, I keep just a giant container of Trash Talker tote bags that I give away at events and, you know, things like that. So
Trash Talker
reusable,
tote bag.
Yeah.
Reusable tote bags.
Yeah, so they're reusable
good.
Tote bags that I give away and every
single... You didn't
bring
me one.
I know. Well,
what happened?
I'll run to my car and grab you one. But every time I go to the grocery store, I'm always like, how did I forget my reusable bags?
Oh,
like I'm,
yeah.
And so I'm always like, okay, if they're in my, I'm like, open my trunk, pull them out, and I'm like, okay, I'm good. But it's
you
only because...
buy the reusable or the reusable one there for like $5 in the grocery store, $2 or whatever. It's like, I don't want to buy the thing for $2.
Yeah.
I'm like you. Well, I'm not like you. I would forget it all the time.
Yeah.
And so, but
see, I at least have the vat in my car that I can pull from.
We've got a ton of those in our pantry that I think my wife uses. I need to probably stick some in my truck and use them. I just,
But yeah, but the other thing that people can do, aside from, you know, making better, you know, or not making better, but, you know, making more environmentally conscious choices in that way, is also, if you do have an idea, reach out to us. We are happy to discuss with you. I give facility tours every day, you know, 8 to 5, you know, come on, stop by.
So can I just swing by or I need to make an appointment?
Yeah,
probably
give me a call because I might, you know, here's the thing. I'm a very busy woman. I could be here doing a podcast.
True,
you know,
you're
I got a lot of stuff going on. So shoot us an email and I'm happy to show you around and talk with you about, you know, if you have an idea, what we can do to help make that happen. Or, you know, apply to the pitch competition. Yeah. Pitch your idea to us. You could win $20,000.
And, you know, that's what I would say to anybody out there that has an idea, whether it be around waste or anything else. I mean, the one thing that you don't want to do is keep it to yourself. Get that idea out there because you never know. You start sharing your idea, other people start collaborating and adding to it, subtracting from it. Next thing you know, you've got something that can be really important for our world. But if you keep it inside, nobody's going to know about it.
Yeah, well, and if you're able to collaborate and to talk with, you know, I call it experts in the area. And while I just talk trash there, I have coworkers that engineer trash and, you know, do things like that. And so I can connect you with those folks to sort of figure out, is the innovation that you're thinking about or your, you know, your business concept or whatever, is it something that's solving a problem that we have? Because I think that we have a really unique problem statement in terms of we have all the waste. It's, you know, the waste is at the end of the line. It's, you know, when we did this pitch competition last year, we got a couple ideas that were about collections where they were like, oh, well, we can add more bins here, you know, add collection bins here. And it's like, the issue is not collecting all the material. We have all the material. It's what do we do with the material now that we have it if we don't have stable markets for it? And so, you know, reach out to, you know, us, the authority, talk with other experts in, you know, whatever industry you're looking to innovate in to really think about, you know, is my problem or is my innovation going to solve a problem that exists and that is, you know, because that's where you can get the really great ideas is by collaborating and by thinking, you know, smart about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay. So how about the problem of the smell of you guys' stuff coming somewhere else? Is there an entrepreneurial idea around that's come to you around reducing the smell or changing the smell?
I would love for there to be.
Yeah.
We've got, I will say we do hold an annual odor workshop. Our next odor workshop coming up is on Thursday, November 2nd at 6 p.m. And so if anyone's interested, you're invited to come and, you know, talk scents.
Mm-hmm.
Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I gotta love a good pun. But so, you know, we're happy to talk about that kind of stuff. We do have some innovations that are coming because we do know that, you know, mitigating odors is a real issue that we, you know, actively take steps to address all the time. Some of those innovations are unfortunately timing related, and so they'll be here by February of 2025. But yeah. I wish that they were here today, which is a real challenge.
Are there some that you're super excited about?
Yeah. So one of the ones I'm really excited about is something called a cold ox machine. So it is a piece of equipment that's going to go inside the new MRF. It sucks in air. It uses ozone to kill the, or to, I guess, diminish the odor-causing components, which are called volatile organic complexes. So it uses ozone to diminish those, and then it pushes the air back out cleaned.
Oh, wow.
And it can reduce odors up to 85%.
Goodness.
Which is pretty cool because, if you've ever taken a tour through the MRF or, just walked by your garbage can, if it's been sitting there for too long, it smells. And sure. Even think about that in terms of like the workers who are inside that building, that'll, also just be a much better working environment too, to do that. But there's a couple of other things coming too, but that's to your point. If anybody has great ideas about how we can reduce, mitigate, diminish odors, we're all ears, because unfortunately odors are a natural byproduct of the material we handle. It's just something that we're always going to have to deal with, but I think that it's a real opportunity for us to be innovative and for us to do some really exciting things around odors. So if people have great ideas, we're happy to listen to them.
And in terms of like the vision and measuring the progress, we've come a long way since I was at the Berry Street Mall as a kid in terms of recycling. Recycling really wasn't even a thing in the in the early 70s, the mid 70s. It was barely getting off the ground. It was basically trying to teach us don't litter. I remember those kind of commercials on TV, but we've come so far. So when you think about like measuring our progress, it sounds like there's still a few things that are getting stuck in the ground that would be cool if they were recyclable, like the plastic bags that you mentioned. What percentage do you measure, like percentages in terms of that circular economy? What percentage of the stuff is not being disposed of in the way that you would like it to be today?
Yeah, so it varies. That number is, oddly enough, not easily, not easy for us to sort of, figure out. I can probably tell you in tonnages how much material we landfill every year. But the landfill has an expiration date. It's, there, as soon as it fills up, that's all we have left, which granted is many years away.
How many tons are going into the landfill? If you know that one off the top of your ballpark.
I don't know that off the top of my head, but if I were to guess.
It's not half the stuff. Is half the stuff going into the landfill or less than half?
I would say it right now, it's probably around half. Less than half, I would say. It's important to note too, so the MRF, when it was built, was designed to recover or recycle 22% of the material that entered it. So in 1995, they said 22% of the material that enters, that's all we need. Now, that's not how much recycling is happening in Placer County. You think about green waste. So if you have a green waste container at your house, 95% of that is getting recycled, which is incredible. You think about construction and demolition waste, over 50% of that could be recycled. And so, the actual amount that our communities are recycling is over 50%.
Okay, so now we just gotta keep squeezing that number down.
And the new MRF that we're building is designed to recover a minimum of 60%. So that means that the amount of stuff that we're landfilling is slowly going down. Ideally, we'd love to see, because there's still some energy potential of materials that are going in the landfill. One of the things I didn't mention, but is really cool about our landfill is, material, we don't even, we still are harnessing resources out of the landfill after it gets buried in the ground. We have a pretty complex landfill gas collection system where we drill rigs inside the landfill that suck up landfill gas or methane, which causes odors and can contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. So we suck out that methane gas, it goes to an energy plant on our site, and it gets converted into electricity. That electricity is sold back to the grid, and we produce enough electricity from our landfill every year to power 10,000 homes in our community.
Oh my gosh.
Which is really cool to think that
gas is coming up out of the ground and it's getting turned into electricity.
It's trash from the 70s or the 80s or the 90s or whatever, but it's, we really think of it as, once again, it's we're harnessing all the resources that we can, and that includes the potential energy of the waste that's going into the landfill.
All right. So any closing thoughts as we think about this stuff that you are you're tackling, and it's super important. But I want to make sure that I give you a chance to any other message that we would want to get out to the entrepreneurial community or the business community of the region.
Yeah. It's, I mean, just if you have an idea that you're looking to innovate with, you know, I'd encourage you to apply to the Circular Economy Innovation Competition. Like I mentioned, we're launching.
And you go down to the Carlson Center to do that? How do you apply?
You can submit online. So okay. You do have to go to the Carlson Center website. But
Carlson Center website.
We're launching during Global Entrepreneurship Week,
which is November.
Yeah. I want to say it's the week before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So yeah. So we're going to do stuff that week to launch the competition, and then we'll pick a winner during Earth Week. So, you know, mid-April. So that'll be when we pick our winner, and you'll get to get mentorship and things like that during the process. But also our odor workshop, and, you know, we'll give you tours, and yeah, we got lots of things going on. So I really would encourage people to check out wpwma.ca.gov or plasterrecycles.com if you want to learn more.
Emily Hoffman, thank you for your leadership, for communicating this this opportunity. And really, I'm really happy that we have something as innovative right here in Sacramento, right here in Placer County, as what you all are doing. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.